This is Average Advice. I'm Zar.
And I'm Tim. Average guys, average stories, average advice.
Welcome to season two, where new and exciting things are on the way.
Stay tuned and stay average.
Do you think we overpromised?
Nah.
Zar, you got some mad bed hair this morning or this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm having a bit of a bad hair.
Yeah, I was right looking at it. I was like, damn, your hair's going crazy.
I'm trying to flatten it, but it's not working.
I don't have that problem anymore. Anyway, back again for another exciting episode of Average Advice. We've got our friend from across, I don't know where actually Malaysia is in terms of the world, but across some pond, our friend Lawton. See him.
Hey, welcome, what's up, bro? Yeah, it's good to be here. Long-time listener, first-time guest. I've had a few honourable mentions in the past, so I was I've got to get on
here.
Infamous, and your viewers are probably wondering who the hell this guy is. So
many drunker story in season one. There was a lot of our friends were brought up in season one that they're like slowly started coming on during season two, and they're like, hey, you put a face to the name now.
Yeah, well, this is for the legacy members, right? This is for the long-time listeners. Let's go.
So
it's good to be here.
I'm glad you're here. It's been actually a long time since we all caught up, seeing you live overseas now. Mm-hmm. But so I think that's a good place to start. Like, what's it been like living overseas?
Especially in something that's such a different culture. Interesting. Yeah, it's definitely kind of interesting. Because you can imagine, so the first year of being here, I didn't have any friends, you know.
Makes sense.
Didn't really, and I was working pretty crazy.
So it was just like home.
Well, no, dude. I got good friends. I swear.
Mom says I'm cool.
The first year was kind of like, I sort of dated this girl. I was like my ex. And I'd spend all my time either with her or at work, right? I didn't socialize.
Makes sense.
I was doing crazy shifts at work, 6 days a week, night shifts. So my social life was just gone. But then this year, the last year, is like the opposite. I'm like running a community here and I'm meeting all these people. I've got a tight crew. We're regularly doing like things like bowling, escape rooms.
Actually, and stuff. Yeah. I was walking home with Shuey the other night and he was saying how you created like a foreigners in Malaysia Facebook group or something.
Dude.
Like, hey, if anyone needs friends,
so
hit me
how you
up.
Do it, bro.
For a bit of context, so because it didn't happen, like I didn't premeditate trying to create a community. There's an already existing chat group on Facebook called KL Expats, and it's got like 80,000 members, right? So it's a Jesus. Pretty popular place for people to come and live. And I was expecting it to be a social thing, but everyone's just posting like, hey, I'm moving out. So do you want to buy my couch
or like, can someone help?
Yeah. Does anyone know how to set up your internet connection in your apartment? I'm lost. I just moved here yesterday and I can't talk to my family. You know what I mean? And so I made a post on this chat saying, hey, I've been here for 12 months and I don't have any friends. Does anyone want to grab a beer
anyone
with
be
me,
my right? friend?
Yeah. So I was like, does anyone want to grab a beer with me? I'm in this area. Come and join. I'll be at this pub at this time. You can come if you want. Right. And
dope.
I had 14 people that were like perfect strangers. They all just sort of like rocked up. They just showed up and it went really well. Right. And I think we were drinking until like 3 AM. We went to like a shisha bar and stuff. And it was a great time. I think even a few of them came back to my apartment that night and they were exchanging their business cards with me. I was like, what do you do anyway? And it was great. So I did the next day. I just created a Facebook group called KL Meetups. And it's not just for expats. It's for anyone in the city. And now I'll just post an event on the page that's like, hey, bowling next week, this time.
Who wants to come? Yeah.
Yeah, who wants to come? And the more I'm doing it, the more feedback I'm getting from the community. And now more people are interested. And it's like, I've got 6,000 members now. And
what the fuck?
Every week they're doing stuff. I've got like admins for my page and stuff.
How many like people show up to like the meetups and stuff now?
It depends. Honestly, from experience, it just sort of depends on what the meetup is. So I did bouldering, like rock climbing. Mm. And only like 12 people rocked up or less.
Well, that's 12 new friends though.
No, it was like less than 12. It was like seven or nine or something like that.
That's still so dope. I mean,
it's because they were all young. Bouldering is like a young person activity, and like most people, they usually quite fit. So the demographic for that is different to bowling, where it's all ages can join. You just come bowling,
for sure.
Just pick up a ball and throw it down the alley. And it's
but still dope. Like creating a new network in a new city is even harder. Like I moved to Sydney, and I mean, luckily that I already had some sort of a network here already, just because I'm so lazy. If I didn't have anyone, I'd probably be more forced to go out and actually meet people. But it's not easy creating a whole new network in a new place.
I thought so too, right? Because I was really worried. I was like, man, how have I lived here for a year? I don't know anyone. All my friends are my work colleagues, and I spend all my damn time with them. I'm sick of these people, right?
Yeah.
And then I just did it, right? It's all I did. I just did something, and people responded to it, and suddenly I've got friends, right?
You have to put yourself out there. That's literally the only thing you have to do.
Yeah, honestly.
Shui was telling me that I'm not sure what happened, but someone apparently was like, hey, who's keen on like a dinner or something? Or maybe messaged you, was like, keen on a dinner? And you're like, yeah, cool. And then on the day you're like, so who else is coming?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, just
this is like a really
hidden date.
Awkward situation, because obviously I'm like a yes man these days with these communities. Yeah. People are like, hey, I want to do something. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, let's go. So this guy after one of the bowling events was like, oh, I'm I really had a good time. Like, I want to set up a dinner. I was like, okay, cool. So I think it was like a week in advance. He said, okay, next Tuesday, come around and we'll go do something together. Right. And then closer to the day, and he was like, we didn't really connect. Honestly, we didn't have anything in common. Like, he was talking about the Fast and Furious movies. And I was like, I really, they're like the only movies I've ever watched.
The Pebble movies.
Yeah. I was like, I don't, the Pebble. Yeah. BB Pebble was over there. Anyway, and I was like, I don't really connect with you, but you know, I was like, yes, man. I'm like, whatever. You set up a dinner, I'll be there, dude.
You might not connect with him now, but maybe a one-on-one dinner is exactly what your friendship needed.
Well, it wasn't. It was with his mother. It was with his mother, one-on-one.
With his mother?
Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt, but Tim, you're really, really loud in my ears.
Is that good?
And you're like kind of yelling as well. I don't know.
I just turned it down. Is that better?
Yeah,
Jamie, bring up Tim's volume levels.
Yeah, I wish.
Wait, but Tim, you can put your mic volume down right on the top right.
Yeah, I just did. I did it on the actual thing.
Yep. You can edit that bit out. Sorry to interrupt, boys.
That's all right. I got excited.
Yep.
So wait. So he brought his mother on the
dinner. No, he lived at home. He lived at home.
Oh, wait, so you went to his house.
Yeah, because like I'm on a really strict diet right now. Like I'm really strict with it. So I told him, I was like, hey, I'm happy to go to dinner, but I just want to know what we're eating so I can sort of mitigate the extra calories.
Yeah.
So I was like, just what are we going to serve for dinner? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I was like, what do you mean?
My mom's cooking it.
Yeah. And he was like, my mom's cooking for us. And I just told him, honestly, I was like, hey, man, like I met you once. We didn't really connect. And I'm happy if you want to set up like a meetup event and we go out for dinner sometime, but I feel uncomfortable going to meet your family. Like, you know, I don't know if, honestly, I was like, oh, is he trying to hit on me or something? I don't know. I had all these thoughts. Well, like, oh, this is
I feel black. Like it could have been one of those situations where he's someone that's always struggled to make friends and he doesn't know how
to. Well,
like,
I did feel kind of bad for
initiate.
That. Because I honestly trying real hard, because now I feel responsible for making people feel welcome.
Yeah.
Right? So one of the things that I'm on the group, we get all these guys trying to scam people and all these guys sliding into girls' DMs that they met on the group. So I had to like come down really hard on the community and be like, if you do this and a girl sends me a screenshot of you sliding into their DM, you're gone. I'm just going to get you out of here, mate. Right? Because I was like, this is just so annoying, right? Everyone's trying to foster this like community.
Offer them good time with lots of money.
Oh, dude, they do it. Some of the posts that I like... Some posts I reject. Like one of them yesterday was literally like, I will date you for 500 ringgits, which is the currency here. And I'm like, why would you post that, man? Like go shoot your shot somewhere. Go shoot your shot somewhere else.
Should have approved it just to see all the comments.
It's wild. Dude.
So you've worked in various countries now, haven't you? You were like,
yeah, I travel
where
around.
Do you think? Of the places you've been to recently, where's been your favorite?
So I always say to people, because I travel quite a lot into different cities, usually for 1 or 2 months at a time, right? So I'm basically not there for a holiday, but I'm there for long enough.
Yeah.
I'm there for long enough that I understand a bit of the culture and the people, and it's pretty good. So I always say, like, I like every place for different reasons, right? Mm. So the only place I genuinely did not enjoy was Jakarta in Indonesia. Like, I love Indonesia. Indonesian people and food are amazing, right? You leave that city and it's beautiful and the people are great. but that city itself just kind of sucks. It's like it always floods, right? Whenever it rains, and it's Indonesia, it's raining all the damn time. And then you have to go on Google Maps in the morning, and it's a different route to work. And then all the roads are congested. Half the roads are all blocked because the water, they're underwater. And it's like, yeah, it's just the traffic's crazy. And then the people, the history there is okay. There are some places, especially because it's like it was visited by the Portuguese, and there's a lot of Portuguese influence there. And it was like a hub for spice trades and stuff. So you can learn a little bit about that. But there's like not really anything to do in the city. It's like you ask the locals, hey, what do you do for fun? They're like, oh, we go to the mall. I'm like, I hate them. I hate the mall. This is not.
What do you do at the mall?
Yeah. So I don't know.
Let's go and eat at the food court.
I hate when people say that though. They're like, what do you guys do for fun? They're like, oh, we go to the mall. I'm like, you've just described a place to go, not an activity.
I go to the mall through necessity, not through my wish to go to the mall.
Dude, I think that's a guy thing though, to be honest. Like when I know I need to buy something, I go buy my thing and then get the fuck out of there as fast as humanly possible.
Hey guys, I just wanted to have a little bit of a moment because yesterday I went to go buy some new work shirts, button-up shirts, and some new work pants, like ideally chinos.
Yep, chinos are great.
I was going to go to like a place like Connor or YD where you can buy some nice stuff. But before we went out, Yaz was like, oh, I want to go to St. Vinny's, because I'm looking for something. And I went there and I found two really nice shirts and some nice pants. So I bought two of each, $27.
Dude, thrift shopping.
I was like, fuck, I'm an idiot for thinking I was going to go to like Connor and spend like $200 on these things.
I've never been someone that spends a lot of money on clothes, hey. Like I know some people that spend all their money on clothes and I'm like, don't get me wrong, preach. They look amazing. They look amazing and stuff, but it's just like I'm so violent with everything that I own that it breaks so quickly anyway. So I've just never understood the point of spending
money. I dress for the social bare minimum just so enough people know that I respect myself, but not enough that I'm like, oh, he didn't put any cologne on. He didn't, you know, he's not wearing a nice shirt.
I've some nice pants and nice shirt just for like dates and stuff, just so I don't look like a fucking Kmart baby whenever I go on a date. But everything else I wear is just for Kmart and Target. Like, who cares?
Yeah,
let's get those like exactly normal plain tees that are like $10 each.
Mm. Yeah, dude, absolute, they're the best.
Absolute bargain.
They're the best too. Honestly, they last forever. I've had one of those shirts that lasted me like 6 years. I'm like, this is sick.
But who cares if they last forever? Like, you just buy 50 of them. Problem solved. Problem solved. They're so cheap.
I used to buy a lot of my you know, I wear like those undies, but they're like. They're like in between undies and boxes.
Yeah, like the jocks.
You know what I mean?
Sort of trunks.
Yeah,
the trunks.
Yeah, the trunks. So I buy trunks as my like go-to underwear, right? And I used to buy them from Kmart all the time until like every pair that I bought would get a hole right on like my Gucci area.
Yep.
And I was like, why this area? This is the weirdest
area.
That's
the most bendable area. That's why.
Zark and Boom Scratcher.
But then,
it's just a Gucci scratch.
But then, as soon as I started buying high quality underwear like Bonds and those like tradie ones and like things like that, never happened.
Yeah,
I've got a pair from like 2 years ago.
High quality underwear is definitely something you should like be willing to fork out your money for, honestly, because it's like, I mean, you just want to be comfortable, and like the more money you spend on your underwear, the comfier you are.
Exactly.
So I want to bring this back right back to the travel topic because actually about clothes. So about clothing, right? So I recently was in Japan and one of the guys I was working with, the Japanese guys, had like this cool style, right? It's like Japanese Asian style. They dress really differently. And I liked it. I was like, this shirt looks
Japanese
sick, dude.
Style is dope.
Yeah. And I was like, where did you get it? Because I'm going to go check it out. And he gave me like a list of shops that he goes shopping at. So I went to check it out. And because I'm like, at the time I was like 95 kilos, I was getting pretty big and I'm tall, like I'm 6 foot, and you know my arms are pretty stocky, and then
nothing would fit.
All of the Japanese people are so small and they're so skinny, like seeing a fat Japanese person, it's like wow.
Same in Malaysia,
like, rare. Yeah,
their large is like the equivalent of a small.
Yeah, so there was like no chance I could buy any shirts in any shops. I was walking around, like I went even to a sports shop to look at jerseys because it was World Cup time, and even the jerseys were like you can't fit.
They know the demographic. Japan. They know the demographic.
So I guess I'd have to, you know, I'd be like Max. I'd have to buy my shoes online, right? If I lived in Japan.
Buy fat people black, fat people pants.
I was, yeah, dude, for
I
real.
I was watching this documentary I was watching this documentary about this guy who wanted to buy one of the limited edition RX-7s from Tokyo.
I'm listening. This story was for him.
He's got wireless headphones on, so he can walk around.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I said
so. That's all right. So this guy was like, I want to buy this limited edition RX-7, only available in Japan. Found one for sale, and he was like, bought it, right? And so he had to obviously go to Japan to collect the car.
Risk.
And so when he got to Japan, he obviously had to register it in Japan to be able to drive it around Yeah. So goes to Japan with his mate. Neither of them speak any Japanese. Yeah. And like, so they go buy the car, go to the like Japanese version of the RTA, like Access Tokyo or whatever. And
Tokyo Drift.
They're like, okay. They were like, before they went in, like, okay, we need a plan because they're going to ask us questions and we don't speak any Japanese. And he was like, okay, if they ask us questions, just nod and say hi.
Yeah, dude.
And then when they pass you the paperwork, just say, arigato. They're like walking. They walk in and there's just like these forms and they're just like all in Japanese.
Of course it's in Japanese.
And they walk up to the thing, hand in the odd plates. The guy's like, speaking to him Japanese, like hey, they just sign a bunch of forms. The guy's like, oh yeah, passes them like some new plates. They're like,
belongs to Tokyo.
and they walk out.
This is like real because like the language barrier in some countries is so significant, and in other countries it's nothing. Like everyone speaks English, and Japan and China, both of those countries I worked in, like there was periods of time where I just didn't speak to anyone for an entire week, right?
Yeah, because no one could speak to you.
Yeah, and you only learn a limited amount of the language because you're there for a short period of time. So you just say the same things every day. You hate the sound of, like, arigato gozaimasu.
And it would suck because the writing's in different characters too. So you can't, like, you see, like, writing, you're like, I can't even try to pronounce that word because I don't know what it says.
And then consider that I work there and the teams that I'm training, because I do training sessions on like the equipment my company sells, right? And then I have like a translator and I'm trying to translate like technical sort of lingo.
Like an actual person.
There'll be one of them that speaks English and then I'll say the whole thing and then it will get translated for me. And I'm like, I gotta rely on the fact that this guy just translated everything nicely, right? Because they gotta, I want these guys to understand.
White man don't know what he's doing, do this instead.
Yeah. I just want these guys to understand the technology. So when I leave the country, they're in good hands, right? And I'm like, I just gotta trust that they understood what I said. I have no idea if this went through.
Thankfully, these guys managed to register the car with no issues. They're like, hi, arigato. Well, and then they walked out. They're like, did we just register the car?
Here's the good thing about the Japanese. So. They put the
plates on and drive away.
They're so helpful. So even if you, like, they're not disrespectful to you because you can't speak the language, and they'll see you struggling and then they'll come, and maybe there's one guy that speaks English and you'll see that you're a foreigner looking at this paper like, and then they'll come up and they'll like, even though they speak like half English, they'll still try to help you. And you're like, it's just, they're sweet. Great. They're really sweet people in Japan.
There's a story that I want you to tell the peeps, Sam, because it by far one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. It was when you first went to China.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you arrived there at like 2 a.m.
Talk about a learning experience, man.
That was by far the scariest thing I've ever heard.
I mean, this story is going to take up the entire damn pod, dude. But
give us the abbreviation. Right.
Okay, I'll give you, wait, hold on. I'm just going to get this.
Needs to get some water to prepare himself.
Yeah, I'm just doing something.
Dude, just bring the water. Bring the water.
No, I have water. I'm making an espresso. sorry, boys. So
of course you
the
are.
Context is that I just started this job, so I'm kind of new to the company, right? And they wanted me to go to China to work, and I was like, okay, right. So they told me Wednesday next week we're gonna book you a flight.
Literally like 4 days.
Yeah, they were like, Wednesday next week we're gonna give you a flight and you're gonna go. So go get your visa, right? And then the next day I went to collect my visa and I got a message saying, oh, you're going tonight instead. So I had like 1 day's notice. So
fuck that.
And then they couldn't, because the company's Portuguese and it's like 9 p.m. and it was like in the afternoon, it was like 6 p.m. and I had to do my laundry within like 2 hours to get a flight at 9. And then they were booking flights for me and they couldn't get a flight from Canberra to Sydney because it was last minute. So I was like, I'll just freaking drive. If you pay for my long-term parking, I'm going to drive to Sydney to pick up this flight, right? So I'm doing my laundry. I'm driving to Sydney. I get there. I get on the flight, and then it's a connection through Tokyo. So overall, it's like 14-hour flight. Anyway, so I leave the next day at 8 a.m. from Sydney, you know, because that was the flight. The flight from 9 was it from Canberra, but they couldn't get it. Anyway.
So you basically spent the whole, all night
I driving. I spent all night driving, right? And I was, this is part of the story too, so that's important context. I spent all night driving, and then I got there and my flight was at 8 a.m., but I had to be there at 5 a.m. for international flights. They tell you to get there 3 hours earlier.
What time did you arrive at Sydney?
Probably about 5 a.m. I was like almost late. Because I couldn't find the Blue Emu parking area. Like I couldn't find the over. Because it's like off site, and then you have to catch a bus to the terminal.
Oh shit!
So they told you at like what midnight or something the day before that you had to take
the next morning. Clear about the timeline. So about 5 p.m. after my work shift, they wanted me to go tonight. They wanted to put me on a flight from Canberra to Sydney at 9 p.m. I said yes. Then when they tried to book it, it was full, and they were like, "Oh, okay, so." I was like, I'll just drive to, because I was excited. I was like, I'll just drive to Sydney. Uh-huh. Yeah. So then the flight from Sydney to Tokyo was leaving at 8 a.m. And I needed to be there at 5 a.m. to check through security. All that. Anyway, so that's all clear.
Damn.
Anyway, so I was new to traveling.
So you're on the flight.
I was new to traveling. So I thought, oh, I just like could sleep on the flight after driving all night, right? I could not. I was not comfortable on that flight. It was like an 8-hour flight. It was miserable. And then I connect Tokyo, get on my flight from Tokyo to Beijing. And, I was also not able to fly to sleep. I just couldn't, right? So the flight arrives at 3 a.m. And mind you, the notice was so short that I did not do any research, right? So first thing, Google and Google services straight up do not work in China, right? And I had Google Translate, right? I was using Google Translate to communicate to people. So instantly, that just did not work.
So it just didn't work.
You can't get to Google at all in China. It's completely blocked.
Exactly right. So when I got through security, I was trying to connect to the Wi-Fi and I just couldn't. I don't think the Wi-Fi service at the time, I don't know what was wrong with it. I
trust you foreigner.
Yeah, dude, I don't know. I couldn't connect. And then I got there and I learned that no one speaks English. I don't know what I expected. I have no idea what it was like the first time I traveled internationally since Fiji, which is a tourist destination for Aussies.
Let's just break down. So it's 3 a.m. You haven't slept for like 24 hours.
Yeah, dude,
and
so cooked.
You can't use Google and no one speaks
English. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely right.
Terrifying.
Yeah. And I couldn't download anything from the app store because I couldn't get on a Wi-Fi and I didn't have a SIM card, right? So I remember like this significant... I did, however, get cash at the airport in Sydney. I got some RMB. So I remember I was at this airport, no internet connection, and I had a printout of my hotel booking, which was in Portuguese because my company's Portuguese, right? So it's just got like the name in English. The rest of the document is written in Portuguese. And I'm trying to show this to a Chinese taxi driver to try to get me to where I'm going to be, right? And I had I asked one driver and he looked at it. He's like, no, no, no. So he goes to another person. The other person, they're looking at it, scratching their chins like, no, this is all gibberish. Then he gets another guy and they keep doing it until there's 14 people. They're all like, then they're talking to each other like a lot. I'm like, what is going on here? Like clearly they don't understand the document, right? And then they're talking to each other a lot. And then I just see like one guy still not speaking English. He's just like, and he just like confidently gets me on. He just like grabs my shoulder, grabs my bag and he's like, yeah, come with me. So I'm in this taxi.
You're like, I fucking hope he didn't just sell my kidney some shit.
Like, I did not have any faith that these people understood where they needed to take me, right? I had no faith. And there was no logo of the hotel on the document, right? It was all just plain text.
And this was Beijing, right? You said it was Beijing. So it's just like busy people everywhere.
What's 3 a.m.?
Just like mesmerized. I
mean, sometimes the airport can be pretty busy at 3 a.m., but this is what we call curfew hours. Not many airports are like 24/7. They usually have some time in the morning between 1 and 4 that they don't depart. They only have arrivals and the arrival flights are limited. So it wasn't too busy. I think the streets were really quiet. It's 3 a.m.
Good. That would have been worse.
That's another thing about China. The city sort of shuts down at 9. You can still get food and stuff online and get apps like delivery, but most of the places shut down at 9. So the city goes pretty quiet. Anyway, So I'm in this taxi, 3 a.m., really, really tired. No way to communicate to anyone. And I'm just like, I just pray he's going to take me to the right place. All I want to do... Just
take me to a bed.
Yeah, all I want to do is like go home and sleep. And it was like the most stressful time. It was like so ignorant to travel. I had no idea what to expect. I was not prepared because of the short notice. It's like brand new to travel.
So you got there though?
Yeah, yeah. So, where he was going? So he took me to the same chain, right? The same chain of hotel, but it was the wrong one that I didn't have a booking for. So, but at least when I got there, the hotel staff spoke English and they were able to help. Oh, they gave me a business card with the address of the correct location. And they said, you could get another taxi and give them this business card with the address and they'll take you to the right place. And it all worked out, but I didn't get to sleep till like 6 a.m.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then you had to get up and work the next day or?
No.
They were nice enough to give you a day off.
Yeah. If you fly, it's like they look at flying hours like work hours. So if you fly for 8 hours, you've done a day's work. So that's my Monday hours, smart, right? And if you fly for 14 hours, like I did, then you've flown almost 2 days worth of work and they'll give you time.
Yeah. What did you do?
The next day, first thing, like, did you go explore? But or yeah, were you like traumatized?
No, I wasn't really traumatized. Like, I had someone, good, I think it was Sam Williams, was there for a week.
Oh, that's right. You guys went to the water park.
Yeah, that's right. So he was there for a week or two when I first arrived, and he sort of showed me what he was doing to get by and the things he did and the food that he liked, stuff like that. So by the time he had left, I was already pretty comfortable. Like, I wasn't traumatized. I was just like, it was just a stressful time because I'm just like, I don't know.
It's
anything,
just one of those things. It's like, whenever I'm flying and I go to a new airport, as soon as I get to an airport, even if my flight's like 2 hours away, I always go and find the gate.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
Yeah,
I
me
do.
Too.
I go and find the gate and I'm like, all right, this is where my gate is. And then I can go and explore. Cause then no matter what, I can make sure I'm back at that gate before my.
See, flight. The thing Absolutely. Is it's easier said than done sometimes because when I arrived in LA, I think I've told this
LAX.
Story. I arrived in LA. I was like, okay, first thing I'm going to do, just find my gate. So I know where to go when my plane departs so I can get back to Australia. And I walked the completely wrong direction and got lost for about 40 minutes.
Yeah, dude.
And no one was helpful. And they all spoke English and no one was helpful.
LAX is fucking gigantic. I have never been to an airport that big yet. I think, yeah, because you went to the giant airport in Indonesia, right, Sam? Because that's a fucking amazing airport. It has like its own like rainforest inside and shit.
Oh yeah, that's actually KL. That's the Malaysia one. They have a rainforest.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah. They have like a little forest area in the satellite terminal. It's pretty good. But
that's dope.
It makes flying out of Canberra so nice because the Canberra airport is like a little shack.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
And you're just like, where's my gate? Oh, it's 5 meters away.
I love when you see like Americans line up for Australian flights and they like take their shoes off and shit. And you're like, the guy's like, no,
take their shoes off.
Yeah, because in America they have to take their shoes off, their belts off, and stuff before they get into a flight.
Oh,
so that's how you can spot an American.
I thought you meant when they were getting onto the plane. I'm like, I'd never seen that.
It's like all the countries have different like immigration requirements and customs, so you don't know what to expect when you go. Like you're connecting in Vietnam, you don't know what they want you to like move your take your shoes off, right? Like, you wouldn't think about it. And they're just like really, they're yelling at you because they want to get the line moving. They're trying to get this shit moving. They're just like, take your shoes off.
And, like, oh. And the worst thing is if they were yelling at you in a different language, you're like, I don't know what you want from me.
It felt really nice coming back to Australia after that trip because I think I was Melbourne I arrived in. And when you're arriving from the international, there was like two signs, like two doors with two signs. It was like visitors and like citizens.
Oh, so
it was
just,
like all the they had to like go off to a separate section so they could like, I don't know, security check.
Yeah.
And I just walked towards the citizen one. He's like, can I see your passport? I'm like, yeah. He's just like, welcome home, man. But I'm like,
you just get to skip all the.
It was just like nice to have that Aussie like, control. Welcome back, mate. You were in the right
spot. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I don't like, this could be like placebo or something, but when I land in Canberra and I take that first step outside, the air smells sweet. Right? Because I'm like, the air's just like better.
Home, baby.
I'm like, I'm back.
Smells like home.
Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah. Man, smells like a meat pie with sauce, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But actually, the first thing I do, no matter what time it is when I arrive in Australia, is I just go to one of the local coffee shops and I get a coffee. And I always love
good coffee.
Just talking in my Aussie accent again, because like most people don't understand me, so I tone it down. And I come back to Australia, like, yeah, don't worry, mate. Just grab this a bloody latte, no sugar. Cheers, love.
Yeah.
Australian accent's so weird. Because, like, I didn't even realize until I started moving away and stuff around that even like, within Australia, we have sort of different accents.
It's very subtle. Yeah.
Very subtle. Yeah. But, like, there's, like, slightly different accents. Well, I didn't even really notice that until I moved to Sydney.
Us Canberrans don't really have one, I think, because a lot of people, when I speak in my accent, a lot of people are like, where are you from? Yeah.
We're like not Bogan. We're the opposite of Bogan.
But compared to Sydney, Sydney seemed to speak very posh like. Compared to Sydney, we speak very Bogan like.
You know those memes of like the Aussies saying no and they're like, no.
Live here, bro.
You know those memes?
No, I mean.
What was that?
Sorry, which meme?
Didn't mean to interrupt you, boys.
That's right.
You know those memes about the Aussies saying like no and they're like, no. You know these ones? People bully me. I did not think we sounded like that. I thought that was just some bullshit meme. And then everyone here is like bullying me when I say no. They're just like, no.
I used to, when I first moved to Sydney, I got bullied for the way I say gone.
You do say gone.
Everybody here says, yeah, well, I mean, you're the only one in our group that says gone. Wait, what do you mean? You said it the exact same way that I just said it. What are you talking
about?
Double
standards. Okay, I take back what I said. You. You're a weirdo.
It's like, you do say gone weird.
I like self-awareness. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
All right. Wait, did you have anything else to say? Or do you want to go to a bucket, Zabi?
We can talk. Down with the bucket? Whatever. Yeah.
So, you know what the bucket is? Like,
oh, Sam? Yeah. I'm well aware of the bucket.
You're well informed of the bucket.
I'm informed.
But bucket.
For our any new listeners, the bucket, we have questions, statements, or... words.
The bucket of zest.
Yeah, they give some tang, some questions, some spontaneous activities. All right, I'll start, Zabi.
Go.
All right. Ooh. So how can we find meaning and purpose in our lives, especially when faced with difficult or uncertain circumstances?
Oh, I gotta think, man. That's some heavy.
Deep fucking question.
How can we find purpose and meaning?
Read the purpose question again.
How can we find meaning and purpose in our lives, especially when faced with difficult or uncertain circumstances? So how can we find meaning in when times are hard, basically?
I feel like it's different for everyone.
Yeah.
I feel like meaning is derived from your, like, purpose and meanings are derived from what you value.
And goals.
Yeah. So like,
I don't, finding meaning in life is so, what's the word I'm looking for, where it's like everyone, retrospective. I don't know the word I'm looking for, but it's different for everyone, depending on what you want to accomplish in life and what troubles you, you know what I mean?
Well, I think, okay, so from,
I feel like as well,
from my perspective, right?
Yes. You go on.
From my perspective, right, it's actually your life experiences will define what is valuable to you. So personally, when I'm thinking about myself, about my purpose and how I feel, it derives from things that I do that help me grow as a person and respect myself better, right? And this is sort of like I've taken this on board. So when I'm doing this stuff and I feel like I'm in the zone, like this is good for me, I feel like I'm bettering myself as an individual, as a person, so I can care about my friends and family better, then this is my value. This is what I feel is my purpose. Yeah. And if I see myself slipping, right? Like last year I gained a lot of weight and I was like slipping and I'm like, this is the opposite. I'm not growing. I'm dipping down. My purpose is being dwindled by the absence of self-respect, right? It's just to get heavy. So yeah, that's kind of like, and I think this is my personal experience, right? This is sort of like what I define as my purpose. But a lot of people put purpose in their family, their partners, their work, their career, but I could take it or leave it.
It's what keeps you going. Yeah. It's what keeps you going.
I could take it or leave it with my job. Like, in fact, I'm thinking of a career change. You know, I could take it or leave it. It doesn't give me much purpose.
You're getting back, you're getting out of IT. You just want to come back to Australia?
No, actually, it's the opposite. I'm trying to get somewhere else. I'm trying to move somewhere else.
Get the fuck out of Malaysia.
No, Malaysia's fine. I mean, I love it.
I agree with you. I agree with you completely, Sam. It's just like, I think that purpose is whatever you put value into in your life. So as you're saying, if you're like, you were getting fat and lazy and you value being fit and being active and like, so your purpose at that moment in time, and I feel like it changes as you go along, but your purpose in that time was to get fitter and feel better and, you know, feel like you're being more productive.
But at its core, it's like,
and things like this.
It's about what you value that gives you self-respect. right? Yeah. So, yeah. And I think if you're happy, your soul is clear and you've got clarity with yourself, you are a better person to the people around you, right?
And I agree. Yeah. And I think you said it yourself. It's just like when anything that you makes you feel like you're going in the right direction.
Yeah, that's your purpose, right?
Because like, yeah, and then it's different for everyone. It's just like if you feel like, because everyone knows. I mean, me personally, I make choices all the time that I fucking hate that I make. Mm. You know what I mean? Like smoking cigarettes still. Every single time I go out and have a cigarette, I hate it. And I know that's something that I definitely want to change within that like sort of field. You know what I mean? So I think, it's different for every person.
Yeah, but in those moments, you've got to understand it for what it is. And you're like, okay, I know I'm slipping. I know I'm doing something that's toxic for my personal growth. And see if you can find some logical and clear ways to deal with it.
I feel like it's important to remember as well that it's okay to fail.
It's good. It's okay. It's good to fail.
Not be perfect. That's it's good. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. And if you have a purpose or a meaning that you are striving for, it's okay that it doesn't happen quickly.
Mm. Yeah. And
you can take years to do it. That's okay. I mean, everyone takes their time with everything.
For sure. It's definitely okay to fail. You want to fail because that's how you learn, but you just don't want to lie to yourself. Like, just be honest with you. Like, because you know, like, I don't know about you guys, but me personally, like, I'll just use the analogy of me quitting cigarettes again, though. But like, when I start quitting, I'll have like little deals in my head that I will just like, you can do one cigarette, it's fine. Like one cigarette's fine, and then you're just lying to yourself. Like I know what I'm doing. I know the cigarettes and things, but because I want that in my life, I'll lie to myself to say that, oh, it's fine. It's fine. It's all this stuff. And you can take that into every other aspect of life. It's just like, if you know the things that the decisions you're making aren't good for the goals that you want to accomplish, like don't lie to yourself.
Those things.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of discipline. These sorts of things.
With like quitting cigarettes, because it's like a physically addictive thing, right? Like your body, your brain is naturally going to try to negotiate with itself. Because your body's like asking you, you know, I need it, dude. By the way, you haven't had nicotine for a while. You should probably put some in me, right? But then,
otherwise, I'm just gonna keep punching your brain.
So if you know it's bad, there's a reason why you know it's bad, right? So the reason you hate yourself when you go and have that cigarette, there's one of the reasons. And for me, I was smoking again last year, and then I started going to the gym again and doing my runs. And I would run like 2 kilometers and then I could feel my lungs struggling. Like the difference is night and day since I quit again. So I've been off for 2 months plus. And then now I'm like a machine on the freaking treadmill. And for me, that's the reminder for me. It's like, I remembered the feeling of trying to do a full like 4K run after having cigarettes, and it burned. My lungs were literally burning. It was bad, right?
Mine's weird, because I could do a 5K run with still smoking at the moment. But I won't start like feeling really terrible until I finish. As soon as I finish and I start to cool down, that's all of a sudden when I'm breathing heavy, and all of a sudden I'm like.
But this is it, right? So if you quit for 2 weeks and then did the same run, you would feel great after, right? I mean, maybe different bodies are different, but I feel the difference is night and day. Like I could still run, but it was tougher, right? And then now I'm like, it's nothing, you know.
When we lived together, it was really weird because when we were quitting that first time, that was like, well, really hit me hard. I started noticing that when I was 100% ignoring the crave to smoke, like, you know, that subtle one where it's just like, oh, you should probably have a cigarette right now. You're running out of nicotine. Like that little thought in your head, I would ignore that. But then what it would do, like my brain, it would like make me think of random situations where I would get angry. And then because I'm angry, I'm like, as like a way to get rid of my anger is have a cigarette. And I started realizing, I'm like, wow, my brain's trying to trick me into having cigarettes by making me feel a certain way about something completely not even related to cigarettes.
Like dealing with any kind of addiction, the brain just goes through like weeks worth of copium to deal with the thoughts that you have. Because you're like, you know it's bad. So, and then you're just like, yeah, but it wouldn't be too bad if I just had one, you know?
So I think the crux of what we're talking about, and I think it applies with this nicotine thing, Tim, is especially because I think the question was like through challenging, difficult times.
Circumstances and
So it's discipline. It's like
repetition.
It's like your brain is telling you you need it, but you have to fight that and kind of stick with what you're doing, because that's the best way to like make these habits is stick with it, be disciplined.
But this is it as well. Like, we're bringing it back to the purpose topic, because for me, when I have those thoughts about maybe I want to have some more cigarettes, like I'm like, oh, but the decision not to is helping me grow as an individual. Like, yeah. I know I have faith that this is the right, this is absolutely the correct way to do it. And you know what? It's okay to be weak. But
yeah, you need to find your anchor.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, whenever you're going through any difficult situation where you know it's going to be hard for you, especially cigarettes, for it's like, we'll just stay on that analogy. Like, cigarettes is because obviously you know it's going to be hard. Like, you're addicted. Finding that anchor point of the remembering the reason of why you're doing it, that I think feel like that's the magic sauce, because as soon as you figure out the reasons why and you can keep reminding yourself that through the process, that will help you get through it. Because I feel, especially for me, whenever I try any sort of like endeavor, like trying to get fit or anything like that, I will be really, really keen at the beginning, but then like sort of midway through, like maybe week 5, week 6, that's when I'll sort of start forgetting the reasons why I'm doing it. And then you lose motivation, you lose willpower because of that.
So
if you can figure out a way to keep the anchor in your head.
When it came to this kind of thing, because like I was sort of similar, and I feel like what you're doing is you're burning out. It's like willpower fatigue, where you're like, you get this idea, you get really passionate and enthusiastic about it, and you go hard, you go fast, and then you like commit so much time and energy to it that one day you just wake up and you're like, I just can't be fucked, you know?
Yeah, and as soon as you allow that thought to do it once, it's like a snowball effect.
Recently, I've been really better because I'm doing like self-teaching courses, and I've always had a history of just being really terrible with education. Like, I really have a hard time focusing. And then I would last time I would try to do my education. Like, I remember like when I was like 21, I went back to do my year 12, and I would do the same thing. I'd be going hard and fast. I'd spend like 3 weeks with my head in the books. Like, yeah, I'm nailing it. This is great. And then after a while, I'm like, I'm putting so much energy into this. Like, my brain is exhausted.
Well, I mean, I think, me personally, I'm just like, I'm just really bad at committing to things. Like, really bad. Even, I mean, every single time I've gone to uni and stuff, like, it's just like, yeah, it's the exact same. I just lose the
fizzle.
This is
like, I've changed it recently. Like, I've done the complete opposite, where now I learned that, okay, this me doing these courses is genuinely making my brain fizzle out. Like, I'm feeling intellectually exhausted. So I just started doing like half an hour sessions a day or 1 hour sessions a day. And I'm like self-teaching, there's no deadline to the course. So I was like, okay, I'll just do one module per day. Or if I can't complete the module, that's okay. At least I've like done it today. Right. I've done it today. Yeah. And
just take a big task and then break it down.
Same
into
like trying to get
chunks
into good habits. Like, now I'm trying to read books and stuff, which is something I don't often do because it takes a bit of time. So I just take like, now I'm doing like a half hour of courses, a half hour of reading. And then you find you're not exhausted from it. You're like, whatever. And then you continue your day. You've done your gym, you've done your study, you've done your reading, then your day is good because you feel good about yourself. And then you do it again the next day. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine's running. If I can run, because I try to run every day, if I can just run every day, I feel like I've at least accomplished something. Even if I fail everything else I've done, I'm like, all right, at least I've done my run.
That's right. So,
Makes you sort of feel.
Honestly, as someone who's done a lot of exercise as a kid, running is a pretty, it's difficult. It's a difficult activity and it gets you really, really exhausted. And to run every day takes a lot of willpower.
For sure.
But so, I get a runner's high, right?
I feel like going for a run after.
Yeah, I get runner's high. I like at the end of my run, I feel great. And then there'll be
so good.
Like, I just had 3 days of off day from the gym because I was really busy. I had some doctor's appointments and stuff. I couldn't do my morning workout before work. And I had those 3 days. I was like not motivated. I was out of sync with my own routine and I was like getting a little bit cut about it. I was like, I just feel like shit. And then I went back and I'm like, oh, I love it.
I was never really a good, like, a runner. I never really enjoyed running. You know what I mean? I never understood why people enjoyed running. And then there was one moment where, because when I was running, I would run for like 10 minutes or 15 minutes or something, but it would like, I would fluctuate and then I would like walk for a couple minutes, then run for a couple minutes. And then there was one point where I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try to run the entire time. And then I pushed myself to run like the full 30 kilometers at like 10 Ks. And then once I got to the end, I just felt so good that I'm like, oh man, I can't believe I actually completed that. I didn't think I was capable of doing that. And then then now I've gotten to the point where now I actually enjoy running fast on the treadmill. Like, it makes you feel good, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like, just breathing when you're sort of, I don't know about you guys, but when I run and get into the zone, your breathing sort of like locks into your body a little bit more, because it, like, you breathe as you're running, me personally anyway. And I feel great now that I've done, I've been doing it every day.
One of the advices that Laurie gave me, because he's like really athletic guy. Every like time you step with your right foot, so every two steps you should be breathing out, and then when you hit it again, you breathe in. So every two steps, it's like a rhythm. You breathe in, you breathe out. Yeah, that's smart. It works. That's what I do. And then it goes hand in hand. Like, just to go off track, I've got a playlist now at 160 BPM, and all the songs are the same BPM. And then my stride, my pace hits the beat.
Yeah,
every time, every single song, and I'm just like, this is the best. This is the best run of my life.
I think. For me, Australian hip hop gets me going on the gym, on the treadmill. It, for some reason, it has the right beat where I can just dance to the beat as I'm running. Like, I kind of want a treadmill at home, because I sometimes I do start dancing on the treadmill, and I'm like, people are probably looking at me. But
yeah, that's they're just NPCs. Right,
do you want to pick another one, Zavi?
just NPCs. You never see them again, right? Just some guys in your life.
I've got one.
Go on.
What is the most important message or piece of wisdom you would like to share with the world?
That's a good one, dude. Why are all these questions so damn deep, boys?
We asked ChatGPT to ask insightful podcast questions.
ChatGPT is woke AF. I'm telling you. It's woke.
It's pretty woke.
Works, it's pretty woke. Let me think. What message do you want to give to people?
Most important wisdom or bit of advice you'd like to share with the world?
Love yourself first.
I think mine are definitely like that, Tim. But I think the thing that really changed my outlook and helped me was just the simple concept of relax.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's okay. Relax.
Go with the flow.
Don't think too hard about it. Don't stress yourself out about it. And it's hard, but like, just relax. Yeah. Just be one with yourself, and just go with who you are. Just go with the situation. Just relax.
Just like, let go.
Just let it happen.
You can fix most situations. Like, most things you can fix, as long as you take it one day at a time and just go with it.
Okay? Yeah,
and don't freak out. I think one of the best things that I heard when I was younger was, I was like, I don't know, there was these guys that were like, you know, the popular guys at school, and they were like sort of mean to me in primary school. And I kept going home, and I'm like, Mom, all these guys are super mean to me at school. And they're like, and I was like, why? I don't know why they don't want to be my friend. And then my mom was just like, but you said they were mean. I was like, yeah. He's just like, what? So why do you want mean people to be your friend? And I'm like, point. Like, why do I want these people that are douchebags to be my friend? And as soon as I thought that, I'm like, you're right.
Yeah.
Like,
why do I even care?
Give a fuck about these guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then one of my ex-girlfriends was like that too. She would come home from work. She's like, there's this bitch at work. She's just so mean to me all the time. I don't understand why she doesn't like me. I'm like, why do you care? She's a bitch. So let her be a bitch.
For me, and you actually had a part to play in this, Lort, but it was like, start of year 11, coming into college, I didn't really have a friendship group to stick, like, that I felt part of. And so I started hanging out with you and Laurie and that crew. And I would just come over and start chatting to you guys. And I remember I said or did something and didn't get the reaction that I was expecting. And so I think I was next to you and Laurie, and I was like, oh, sorry, boys. And I'm not sure if it was you or Laurie. They were like, why are you sorry? I was like, oh, because like, I said that weird thing. And you were like, oh, there's no need to be sorry, dude. It's fine. Like,
it's okay to be weird. Just have a good time.
I say weird things all the time.
It was like this like tension that my brain was creating with itself to like fit in. It was just sort of like eased away, and honestly, it was like, that was the start of this just relax, this be fine, thing, it's right? Okay.
I'm always, I think it's an Aussie thing, by the way. I think we apologize for things that we aren't sorry for. I think it's like, we're built into this culture to be over, like, kill people with kindness, right? You're like over the top, and I still do it. I know I'm doing it, and I'm still doing it. And I'm like, my current partner calls me out all the time. She's like, you're not sorry though. Why would you say it? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
I want you to feel, Because I think it comes from the banter culture, honestly. It's just like, it's the same reason why I say ha 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 in all my text messages. Because I want them to know that I'm joking, you know what I mean? Because I got so much trouble so many times from my big, big sarcastic mouth that I need to make sure that everyone knows that what I'm saying is not really accurate. Like, I'm not really being a douchebag, you know what I mean? I think that's where it comes from. Where, I don't know if you took it this way, but this is the way I meant it. Well, that makes sense.
A piece of advice that more recently, the last 5 years or so, has been more applicable to my life.
Is it average?
But
average.
No, it's a great piece of wisdom.
Above average advice.
Is that be the person that's proactive and takes initiative with things. Like, for instance, like if you go to work, you're starting a new job and you don't know anyone, just be the person that introduces yourself and talks to people, because a lot of people won't do it. Mm-hmm. They don't feel comfortable with it. And if you're the person that is willing to do that, people feel more comfortable with you. They go, oh, he's not afraid to put himself on the line. Yeah, I definitely can relax around him.
And this goes back to what we were saying.
I agree with you, Zara. Just quickly, that most people are willing to have a conversation. They don't like the awkwardness or the fear of rejection. So if you take that away from them and just create an open opportunity to have a conversation, most people will jump at the chance.
This comes back to what you were saying earlier about like failure, right? And a lot of the reason why you wouldn't do something is simply because you know, like, oh, it's going to be difficult, it's going to fail, right? But that's okay, right? You just got to go and do it. There shouldn't be anything holding you back from wanting to do something. And let's look at this community as an example. I just sort of like built it accidentally. I just went and did something. I got a bunch of people together. The community feedback was like, we like this. And then it got bigger than that, right? And it just happened. It's like, just because I did something, I was proactive. It's absolutely true. Don't be afraid to fail. Failure is almost inevitable, but you should revel in the failures and learn from it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the people that are scared to fail, I'm just like, well, look at it this way. If you go and fail, you'll be in the exact same position you've done now, except you'll know 100%. What not to do. Where if you don't do it at all, you just have no clue, and you'll just be wondering what could have been.
You just go back to the same place you were before.
I say this, but then I also, if I see like a cute girl walking down the street, I still won't go up and talk. It's one of those things where I follow my advice for most of the time, but it's like, yeah, it's one of those situations. I wish I had the confidence to just go and talk to anyone, but there's still boundaries in my world. Well, I do like the fact that if I, like, all my friends up here have told me this, they're like, you're the only person that I know, if I go to a party and I accidentally leave you alone, I don't feel bad about that, because they know I'll be able to just go off and make new friends. And I'm like, good. That's exactly what I want. I want you guys to feel like that. Because I'm like, nothing's more annoying when you bring someone to a party and they have to, like, you know, pop you around because they're just scared to talk to new people.
So I have a bit of, what? I have a bit this of a nugget of wisdom. And this is a hot take because my mother hates this freaking
hot take from Johnny Lawrence.
She hates this opinion of mine. But like, coming from a person who's traveled quite a lot, right? I've learned pretty real lessons that the world is a massive place and I am pretty small and insignificant, not in a self-toxic kind of way, but you know what I mean? Like, my actions that I'm taking in life are so isolated to my experience. They barely affect everyone else. So it's a bit liberating when you find out that you're so small and the world is such a big place. It's just so open to possibilities. You're so free to do whatever you want. So try not to limit yourself by what your opinions are of other people. Try not to dwell so much on your faults.
It's crazy to think that a lot of these things that hold people back, a lot of these things like fear is all in your mind.
Yeah,
for sure. And it's like these things, all these walls, that all these like barriers that you're creating are your own brain trying to protect your like ego or your self-esteem. And it's like, they don't exist.
Yeah, they don't exist.
The other day I got really mad about a chess game. I was really, really mad. Like, I was like, oh, I almost won. And then I threw it away and I was really mad. I was fuming. And then I just thought, but it's all in my head. I'm just mad for no reason. Like, this is just my brain. Like, if I just drop it, and go on with my life, I'll feel better. Yeah. And I had to like really be like, it's okay.
Well, you'll live. I saw a great quote the other day. It was just like, everyone's scared. Everyone is super, super cautious if they go back in time and change something small, that it will change the future. But no one ever thinks about if they change something small in the present, it will change the future. Mm. They're like, wait. Yeah, if they go back and change something in the past, it will change the present. But no one's scared about changing the present for the future. And I was like, man, that is, I never thought of it like that. It was like the small things you do now affect what's going to happen in the next 5 years.
The reason why my mom hates this freaking philosophy is because I just go around saying you're insignificant and the things you do don't matter to anyone outside your close friends and family. And I'm serious. Like, apart from how I affect my family and my nieces and my parents and you guys and my close friends. Apart from the things that I do that could trigger you guys, everything else I do is just so insignificant. No one cares if I fail. Mm. Like, I'll go down the grocery store and I'll have a cringe moment to the cashier and I'll be like, why am I so freaking awkward? Why is this so cringe? And then later on, I'm like, well, they don't care. They don't even know who I am. They'll probably never, ever see me ever again.
They'll never ever see me ever again.
And they're not going to go home and talk to their wife about this white guy they saw. That was cringe AF at the freaking grocery store. No way. Yeah.
But even if they do, then yeah, why do you be care? Like, why are you telling me about this random person?
It's like, why are you talking about
white? Yeah. Like, yeah, dude. Honestly, so once you get this like thing out of your head, it's like liberating. You can dance on the treadmill. Literally, you probably only see those guys once or twice a week, and they don't think of, as soon as you leave their presence, they don't even think about you, dude. You're like nothing to them.
It blows my mind how much brain power people put into like little things that, like, it's so easy for me to think about. I mean, I knew people that would refuse to call people on the phone to order things. Like, they just couldn't do it. They couldn't bring themselves to talk to someone on the phone. And I'm like, I was like, if this is such a big problem for you, like, I'm surprised. I just don't understand how much brain power you put towards these little
things. Yeah, dude, it's crippling, man.
That really
means anxiety is crippling. Yeah. It genuinely stops people from doing anything.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't have any. Yeah, I'm glad I'm talking from not experience because I've never experienced any sort of like high level anxiety. I mean, I have sort of had anxiety situations, but nothing to an ongoing thing for sure.
Well, going back to
something Zah said
is like one of those, because like, I used to have like a lot of anxieties, right? I used to hate ordering food at shops. I used to hate talking to the guy and telling him what I wanted. And then I was like working in New Zealand with some Portuguese guy. And he just like told me, he's like, dude, everything you're doing, you're like trying to rush, you know? And you're like, you don't think, you just like, he saw that I was like an anxious ball of mess and that I was just rushing and, you know, so stressed. And then, and then things. that's the time I learned the lesson of just like chilling the fuck out and relaxing. So is that what you were saying before? It's like, relax. And I learned it.
You just got to relax.
So I was like, dude, this guy's absolutely right. And it stopped me from paying attention at work. It stopped me from interacting with people on a genuine level and having real good conversations with people because I was like so anxious about it.
It's the exact same. When you came and saw me do stand up for that one time, like every other time that I knew no one else was in the audience watching me, I was a little bit more relaxed. But as soon as I knew there was people looking at me like that I knew, I don't know, everything, I freaked out. And like I find that you start just talking a lot faster because you're not enjoying being up there. You just want to get it over and done with. And like, if you're not enjoying the moment,
it's funny that because like I learned recently just how, because I'm really open and relaxed and I'm like, oh, I don't give a frick attitude to the way I'm talking to people and just being myself. But then if it's someone I really care about,
you can say fuck by
someone I really care about, I'm learning that their opinion of me affects me greatly. And then I better start behaving wildly because I'm trying to recover their opinion of me. And then I'm like completely doing the opposite of what I'm supposed to. And it's like my whole life, my professional career, I'm nailing it. I never take on board too seriously. Like I take criticism really well. I'm like, okay, you know, it doesn't get to me. And then when it comes to someone I really care about, like my partner, I'm like, okay, I got to sort this shit out. It's like, I panic.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Change shit. It's like, well, panic. I panic. It's just like, I mean, I don't really care. I don't really care what anyone else thinks about me, but like the people that I care about,
but
I care what they
think. Me
about
in that all show, you guys, I care about me in that show. Like you probably would probably more nervous that you had me and those two other friends of yours. 100%. They're like close friends of yours.
Yeah.
It's not just a bunch of random NPCs. Like these are guys that you're going to see again and they're forming opinions of you in your head.
If, if it was just you and my friend, if, but the fact that they brought their boyfriend, which I was just like, I don't
know.
I was just like,
and she probably like talked you up a little bit too. Like, dude, this guy's so funny. Check this guy. Yeah. He's going to do a comedy show. He's so good. He's so funny, dude. That was a good show, man. I remember that.
I remember I forgot. I did the age old trick. I forgot to move the mic stand. So whenever I was walking back and forth, the mic just kept getting caught on the cord. That was awkward. Awkward times.
So you remember that stuff, but it comes with practice. You know what I mean? Like me as the audience member, like all that cringe shit where you're just like, fuck, I fucked up the mic. The mic cable was all tangled up. Yeah. And it's all jacked up. And I'm just like, yeah, it was a good show. I like that. That was a good time.
Yeah, it's the little things that I suppose when you're not experiencing the awkwardness, the things that were important to me in that set were probably not as seen as you guys, which is good. But for me, I'm just like, man,
it's hard to turn your good friends into NPCs. You can't block it. You're like, I know they're watching me and I'm doing something new and I'm vulnerable.
I know their opinions. Yeah,
I'm doing something new, I'm vulnerable, and these boys are gonna talk shit later.
For any of our listeners, NPC means
non-playable character.
In case anyone was like, what the fuck?
It's a Zoomer gamer reference.
It's like every other sim that's not you in Sims.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's an hour, boys. Fuck, that went real fast.
I enjoyed it.
Thank you for coming on the show, Lort. I wish you enjoyed yourself.
No, appreciate you coming, Mark.
It was a lot of fun, and I'm glad to be involved.
I was a bit concerned. I was like, we know Sam so well. We've talked about so many things. Are we going to be able to talk about it? But it was great.
It's been a while. You've done things recently that were interesting. So I'm like, we could do a whole hour of just how you moved. Fucking.
I actually have more to talk about too. Like, I'm so self-centered. My life is doing. I'm doing crazy shit. Let's go.
Well, I mean, this is the first catch-up we've had in like fucking.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute.
Months. But we'll leave the episode there for now. But we'll see everyone next